I'm going to, while visiting here with you all, I'm going to be continuing with the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So far, I've completed the first six chapters, and I've just begun chapter seven. And just so that you can appreciate how Shukadeva Goswami has prepared his audience for the chapter 7, I'll just make a little explanation of the conclusion of chapter 6. The conclusion of chapter 6, which is entitled Purusha Sukta Confirmed, describes the personality of Godhead, because that's Purusha, Lord Vishnu, the forms of the Lord who create the material world, and maintain it and see to its withdrawal. That same Supreme Personality of Godhead who manifests the Purusha avatars manifest the other forms of the Lord within this world. I don't think it's going to work. I think she's got to go just outside or something like that. There must be some way to do this. There are several verses where Shukadeva Goswami explains that the Absolute Personality of Godhead is unlimited, and the tiny living entity who is very limited cannot understand the unlimited and his fullness. That tiny living entity cannot understand the Supreme at all. By his own power, such as the power of speculation, but can, too, to the degree that the Lord illumines the heart of the devotee, proportionate to the devotee's surrenders, proportionate, the language is used repeatedly, proportionate to his purity, proportionate to his devotional service, he can understand to some extent. So, repeatedly, in so many ways, Shukadeva Goswami wants us, before hearing the scheduled incarnations of the Lord, which is chapter 7, to understand the Lord is transcendental. He never becomes influenced by anything material. Even he comes into this place which he has created, rather this place is under his control. Not that he becomes under its control. And so the living entity and the Lord are distinct. The living entity and the Lord are distinct. So when we hear the incarnations of the Lord, we should understand these are pastimes of the unlimited, inconceivable, absolute personality of Godhead. To the degree, so one more time, because he says it so many times, to the degree that one has a heart that become purified through devotional service, to proportionate to that degree of purity one has achieved, one can understand to some degree the Supreme Lord. So he begins Chapter 7, Shukadeva Goswami says, I am now going to describe those forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. And there are several such lists. You all have been studying the first canto regularly, so chapter 3 of the first canto has such a list. Chapter 7 of the second canto has such a list. Chapter 4 of the 11th canto has such a list. Just listing, not detailing. And then in different places in the Bhagavatam, there's details. So this chapter is, about two-thirds of it, is such a list. And he begins with very, very early in Satya Yuga, during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. There's a form of the Lord named Suyagya, not one that we hear so much about, but it's mentioned in that 11th canto list, not in the first canto list. Prajapati Ruchi and his wife Akuti had as their son one form of the Lord named Suyagya. And so some description of Suyagya. The emphasis that Prabhupada makes is it's not whimsical that someone just comes along and says that they're I'm Kalki Avatar. I've got a big white horse and I'm Lord Kalki. But he has the symptoms, the name of the father, the name of the province, and all the information that we find within the Bhagavatam about the confirmation of the personality of Godhead. Then he mentions Lord Kapila, the second in the list, the son of Kardamuni and Devahuti. So we know about Lord Kapila. Extensively, he's discussed in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. And then there's mention of Dattatreya. So that's what we're going to be discussing this evening, Dattatreya. Here's what Shukadeva Goswami says about Dattatreya. The great sage Atri Muni, prayed for offspring, and the Lord, being satisfied with him, promised to incarnate as Atri's son, Dattatreya, or Datta, the son of Atri. Datta Atreya, the son of Datta, the son of Atri. And by the grace of the lotus feet of the Lord, many Yadus, Haihayas, etc., became so purified that they obtained both material and spiritual blessings. So, that's the verse. And in the purport, Prabhupada chooses to speak about the personality of Godhead has various types of relationships with him, and one of those types of relationships is parental, or vatsalya rasa. Shanta, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, and madhurya. These five principal rasas. So, Atri and his wife, her name was Anasuya, they had that relationship with the Lord in Vatsalya Rasa. So because they had that relationship of Vatsalya Rasa, he agreed to be their son. Then he says something very obvious but nice. The father actually serves the son, whereas the son only demands all sorts of service from the father. Of course, some sons don't do that. But parents are serving their children. So Prabhupada says, therefore, a pure devotee who is always inclined to serve the Lord wants him as the son and not as the father. It's an interesting way of looking at it. Because in most religions, God is the father of all. Same Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the seed-giving father of all living entities. So, many religions look to God as the Father of all beings, the Supreme Father, so and so on, you know, the O Merciful and Mighty. So that looking upon God in His majestic feature is common, but the science of the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us that the devotee of the Lord may take this position of wanting only, so much wanting the service of the Lord. The common explanation you've probably all heard so many times, but it's nice to hear it again. Lord Chaitanya's teachings begin with dasya. There are five principal rasas, but he just bypasses shanta, or neutrality. Goes straight to dasya. And when that servitorship, the desire to serve the Lord, becomes more and more concentrated and more and more concentrated and thick, then the service, just like you could say, Prabhupada gives the example, like a intimate servant of a wealthy man, he serves that wealthy man so intimately that he becomes like the friend of the person he's serving. And so, like that, the rasa of friendship is the thickening of the servitorship. So, what's in friendship, servitorship is already there, but something else is added, an intimacy between servitor and served, an intimacy of friendship. And when that friendship goes thicker and thicker and thicker, the one friend thinks of the other friend like, this other friend is, I want so much to serve them, they're dependent upon my service, it becomes parental affection. And the intimacy, of course, it's not a mundane kind of intimacy, it's another kind of intimacy. But the intimacy of the parental affection, the awe and veneration is already gone, and so wanting to completely dedicate one's senses to the satisfaction of the senses of the object becomes this madhurya feature. And appropriate is the conjugal relation of madhurya rasa. So speaking of vatsalya rasa, parental affection, this is where there's so much a strong desire to see the Lord. He's depending upon my service. And so Atri prayed to the Lord for that opportunity to serve Him in that way, and the Lord granted that desire. And so Prabhupada says that there's thousands and thousands and thousands of such examples of vatsalya rasa, for that matter, for each of the incarnations of the Lord. He doesn't need to appear in any way. He can appear however he likes to appear. But to satisfy the devotee who desires that relationship, he accepts the position as the son. So, as many incarnations as there are of the Lord, which are as unlimited as there are waves in the ocean, there are parental relationships, one of them being with Atri and Anasuya towards Dattatreya. In the Brahmanda Purana, there is a description that's quoted by Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam, where his wife, Atri's wife, is Anasuya. And Anasuya, she was praying very, very sincerely on behalf of herself and her husband for the Lord to appear before her. She did not specify which Lord should appear before her. And so all three, Vishnu, Brahma, and Lord Shiva, simultaneously appeared before her. She was a little overwhelmed. But she was fixed, and she prayed, if what is it, when asked, what is it that you desire? She said, well, if you so desire, I would very much like that you all three combine into one and become my son. And they agreed. So by the tears of Atri, he impregnated the womb of Anasuya, and Dattatreya was born. As the combined incarnation of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. And Dattatreya is very surprising in many ways. That's just one of them. An incarnation of all three. There are places in the Bhagavatam, several verses in the Bhagavatam, which describe Dattatreya as a partial incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Dattatreya is described as being an incarnation of the Lord's knowledge potency, as an empowered incarnation, like Shaktivesh Avatar. Partial incarnation of Vishnu, Shaktivesh Avatar, he has, he's an incarnation of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Two other sons of Anasuya, or Soma and Durvas Muni. Durvas Muni being a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva, Soma being a partial incarnation of Brahma, and Dattatreya, her third son, is a partial incarnation of Vishnu. Doesn't clarify these things, it just makes these statements, so don't ask me how does this fit with that, because there's no explanation. It's described about Dattatreya that he was master of mystic powers. For example, there's not a lot of examples of it, it's just repeatedly described like that. In the verse, by the grace of the holy feet of the Lord, Dattatreya, many Yadus high as etc. became so purified that they obtained both material and spiritual blessings. Haihaya was a king, and Haihaya worshipped Dattatreya, and Dattatreya gave him benediction of having 1,000 arms. Banasura also got benediction of 1,000 arms from Lord Shiva. And so he got a material benediction. But he also got a spiritual benediction, because by getting 1,000 arms, something happened to Haihaya, very similar to what happened to Banasura. He got very proud. I mean, I think it would be an embarrassment to have 1,000 arms, but he was very proud. And Haihaya, along with his sons, went to the abode or the hermitage of Jamadagni, and he requested Jamadagni to give him his kamadenu, his wish-fulfilling cow. And Jamadagni didn't agree to do that. So Haihaya stole the cow. And when Parashuram, the son of Jamadagni, found out, end of Haihaya. He killed him. And because he was killed by an incarnation of the Lord, he achieved salvation. So he got material and spiritual benedictions by worshipping Dattatreya. And the it says Hi-Hayas, and the sons of Hi-Haya also, they got Parashuram's chopper. And Yadu, there's no detail described, but in the ninth canto is mentioned, because in the ninth canto it's the lineage of kings just leading up to Krishna's appearance in the tenth canto. So Yadu was one of the kings in which Krishna, the dynasty in which Krishna appeared. So Yadu also worshipped the lotus feet of Dattatreya. He didn't get 1,000 arms benediction, but he got a benediction of transcendental knowledge. And this is another feature of Dattatreya's, at least I find to be a little enigmatic, difficult to understand. He told him that he should observe the world, observe how the world functions, and by observing how the world functions, become detached and fix his consciousness upon the Supreme by doing so. And so Yadu did. And by the blessing, it's not just the instruction, but the extraordinary person himself, Yadu received great material and spiritual benedictions from Dattatreya as a result of this teaching. Elsewhere, when it describes about Dattatreya, he carries the Lord's potency of knowledge, Gyan Shakti, he instructed great devotees. He instructed Prahlad. Of course, Narada was the primary spiritual master of Prahlad, but Dattatreya also taught Prahlad. And Alarka, and again it's mentioned Hi-Haya. So for devotees, he taught spiritual knowledge. But he's also referred to many places as an impersonalist. So this is where it gets really blurry. Like, he's an incarnation of Vishnu. He's listed right here in the Bhagavatam as an incarnation of Vishnu. And he's teaching impersonalism. He's teaching Sankhya philosophy, clubbed together with the impersonalist Kapila, and Kannada, an atheistic impersonalism, with such emphasis on the soul and spiritual understanding that knowledge of the Lord is not presented. Jiva Goswami, in his Bhakti Sandarbhas, goes so far as to say in Bhakti Sandarbha that those who are worshippers of impersonalists like Dattatreya are Pashandis. But he's an incarnation of Vishnu. So he's difficult to understand. So it seems there's not a lot explained about him other than these little things that I'm mentioning. So it seems that it very much depends upon how one approaches him, like Eyatamam Prapadyante, how he reciprocates with Prahlad. Prahlad's not going to be interested in anything other than devotional service, that's for sure. So he taught devotional service to Prahlad. And to others, he gave knowledge of impersonal, minus the personality of Godhead, understanding of the soul, transcendental knowledge, minus the understanding of the Supreme, according to the Sankhya system, or impersonalism, like the impersonalist, like Sankhya philosophy, that's not, as Lord Kapila taught it to Devahuti, it's just, Sankhya means an analysis of matter and spirit, without any understanding of the controller of both. Just what matter is and the unfolding of matter and the laws of cause and effect of matter and all of that, but how this, the transcendental self is apart, is separate from that. So understanding spirit or the individual self apart, separate from the Supreme, well, that's impersonalism. So somehow Dattatreya was in that position. No explanation, just that that's what he did. And when you see pictures of Dattatreya, or descriptions of him, he has three heads. And he's depicted as being fond of dogs, or dogs are fond of him, or something like that. He's depicted with dogs, the Supreme Lord. Kind to all living beings, I suppose. A little difficult to understand, Dattatreya. And he's listed here. Now, Dattatreya is not, you all know this, he's not so popularly worshipped in the world, although, at least from my experience, in Gujarat to some degree, there is some stronghold of worshippers of Dattatreya. And I don't know how that happened, you know, historically how that happened, but it's not that the those from Gujarat who are worshipping Dattatreya are doing so because they want to keep dogs, or because they want impersonalism, or even so much they want material benedictions. My sense is because they have some sentiment for worshipping Lord Shiva and worshipping Lord Vishnu, and, you know, find if Brahma's included in there, and he represents all three, something like that. Not, in other words, not with a lot of deep understanding of anything, but just a kind of sentiment for forms of the Lord, and this being one of the forms of the Lord. Now I'll go back to what was said before. When hearing about the incarnations of the Lord, what one is not supposed to do, or it's not intended that you, like some material knowledge, you try to figure it out and you settle this thing with that thing, and then you have some, you know, material understanding of material subject matters. And the forms of the Lord are not meant to be heard like that, nor is the benefit to be derived from hearing the forms, hearing of the forms of the Lord, just, you know, another piece of information to know about. Oh, here's another incarnation of the Lord. That was interesting. What's next? Rather, just hearing about the, because the Lord, because the living entity has a tendency to be influenced by matter, when that conditioned living entity comes in contact with transcendental description of the Lord and his transcendental form, the living entity becomes purified. Just like it, the pastimes of Krishna, they're very wonderful. To understand the pastimes of Krishna, how can you understand the pastimes of Krishna? A little boy who is 3 months old recognizes that this person has come to kill me in Sputana, but she's come as mother, so I accept her as mother, and I at the same time suck out her life air, and she's gone, she's killed. Next, Shakatasura, assuming the form of a cart, and he hides as a cart, and Krishna recognizes and kicks the cart, and Shakatasura gets crushed. Next, Govardhan Hill, lifting of Govardhan Hill, 7 days. It's not something that is for our material intellects to like figured out. And the Lord is exhibiting wonderful pastimes. And he's giving happiness to the devotees at the same time he's delivering the non-devotees. So in various, unlimited varieties of ways, the transcendental Lord performs his wonderful pastimes. And the Bhagavatam doesn't deal so much with Dattatreya, but so there's not a lot to describe about Dattatreya. I've tried to describe what there is, and from our acharyas' commentaries. But the main thing is when hearing about the forms of the Lord, just by the very process of sound vibration, spiritual sound vibration of the Lord, the names of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the forms of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord, because the Lord is fully spiritual, he never becomes materially contaminated. The contaminated living being becomes purified just by hearing these descriptions. And they're very wonderful. And so, because of their wonderfulness, the mind becomes attracted. And then we can fix our minds upon the forms of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, his mysterious pastimes. This is the benefit. So during this, I was even thinking when coming to the seventh chapter, I was considering not spending so much time on the seventh chapter and just going through it very quickly. But then hearing what Shukadeva Goswami described at the end of the sixth chapter, I thought, no. Because we're accustomed often to hear very much about the process of devotional service, how to perform the process of devotional service. But impetus to take up the process also comes from hearing what the goal is, or hearing the activities and qualities and forms of the Lord. And Shukadeva Goswami was expressing, This is the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where he's giving access to the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. The first two cantos, according to Padma Purana, the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are the lotus feet of the Lord. And they teach it this way in the Bhakti Vaibhav course. You're familiar with the Bhakti Shastri literatures, Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, and Sri Ashupanishad. Of course, also the first canto of the Bhagavatam. So the first canto of the Bhagavatam is part of Bhakti Vaibhav, the first six cantos of the Bhagavatam. But the first two cantos, they're the lotus feet of the Lord. And approaching the lotus feet of the Lord means to become fixed up in the mood of service. Consider, when you're at the lotus feet of the Lord, what's the mood? It's humble service. So that which brings out the mood of humble service in a maximum way as the subject of the second canto. So hearing these descriptions of the Lord in the right, with the right purpose in mind and with the right mood, it's to bring about a greater appreciation of the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, the unlimited features of exchange with his devotees that he exhibits. A three-headed form of Vishnu that associates with dogs and teaches impersonalism to some and pure devotional service to others. But one can understand, even by that, whatever it is that he's teaching, ultimately has a spiritual benefit and purpose behind it. Anyway, simply by hearing, whether we can understand or not, simply by hearing about the forms of the Lord and the qualities of the Lord, the appearances of the Lord, it, for the faithful devotee, again, there were like 10 or so verses with ample purports describing the Lord who performs this act of creating, the Purusha avatars, cannot be understood by ordinary beings. Brahma says, even I cannot understand, nor you can understand fully. And yet, whatever I'm describing, it's absolutely right. And the reason it's right is because I've taken firm hold of the lotus feet of the Lord, and I won't let go. And as a result, my mind and my senses are under full control, and my speaking is perfect, although I have not unlimited knowledge of the unlimited Supreme Lord, because I'm limited. But whatever it is that I've spoken, the Lord upholds it as true. He controls my mind and senses and my speech. And therefore, it's never proven wrong. And this is the way of devotional service. So, hearing about the forms of the Lord is also part of that process. An important part of the process. Therefore, it's in this Canto 2, the Lotus Feet of the Lord chapter. Chapter 3 of Canto 1, Chapter 7 of Canto 2. So I thought I would spend some time this evening just giving a little bit of background, and as we go along, maybe we'll cover more than one verse each class, depending upon the form of the Lord that's being described. See if there's any discussion on this topic. Yes. Yes. There's a very wonderful explanation of that, limited, in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's discussion with Professor Suthers of Ohio University, found in Ray of Vishnu. He doesn't detail it. Prabhupada mentions that in one purport in the Bhagavatam, the first canto. He doesn't explain it, just mentions it. So Bhaktisiddhanta expands that understanding a little bit. His language is unique, and his way of explaining things is unique, so I can't do proper justice to it. But in essence, the Lord appears in these state, like, you know, he smashes Darwinian evolution on its face, but then says the Lord also appears as an aquatic, as a crustacean, a tortoise, you know, can live on land or water, and then half man, half lion, and then the uncivilized, and, you know, goes up. Parashuram, the warrior, Krishna, Balaram, Lord Ram. So, as the Leela avatars, he's showing how he makes his appearance in the various species of life. But it's not like there's an incarnation of the Lord as a pigeon, and there's an incarnation of the Lord as... But he does appear in those different species of life. Hamsa avatar. Lord of spiders. That there's not like that. Not like that. In the way that Bhakti, at least that's the only scriptural reference I've seen, and it makes more sense than the other. The Lord of the octopuses. The Lord of jellyfish. the Lord of the lizards, the Lord of the rats, the Lord of the bats. Not like that. So you can read that section from Raya Vishnu. It's very interesting. Sanju, you have something? No? Yes. Yes, unlimited. But which? No. It's that, you know, some come occasionally and some don't. Prominent. Does it say permanent or says prominent? Prominent, yeah. Well known and lesser known. It's not divided like that. It's divided by those that are well known and those that are less known. Yes. He wants to know, do all souls go through those stages? Servitude, friendship, parental, conjugal. I don't know of any scriptural reference that says anything like that. The indication, rather, is that from Nectar of Devotion, there's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti that everyone does. And that Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti that everybody does promotes the mood of service and purifies the mood of service. And then Nectar Devotion explains, at some stage, at a very mature stage of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, one may become attracted to a particular eternal servant of Krishna, a ragatmika. And while continuing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, internally one may meditate on that particular, and naturally it will happen, meditate on that particular perfected soul and how they serve Krishna. For example, Mother Jasoda. One may just become so attracted by the, and so including the descriptions of Mother Jasoda's dress, her hair, her features, her moods, it becomes part of the internal meditation of the devotee while they're doing their Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and that becomes Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti. So it goes from the only indication that I'm aware of from Nectar Devotion is from the general mood of service to the particular attraction for an eternal associate of Krishna. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This is from Canto 9, Chapter 15. King Parikshit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, what was the offense that the Kshatriyas, who could not control their senses, committed before Lord Parashuram, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God, and for which the Lord annihilated the Kshatriya dynasty again and again? Shukadeva Goswami said, the best of the Kshatriyas, Kartavirya Arjuna, the king of the high highest, received 1,000 arms by worshipping Dattatreya, the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Here it says plenary, elsewhere it says a portion, partial expansion. He also became, that's Haihaya, the Kartavirya-arjuna, the king of the Haihayas, or also called Haihaya, also became undefeatable by enemies and received unobstructed sensory power, beauty, influence, strength, fame, and the mystic power by which to achieve all the perfections of yoga. Imagine, he got pretty puffed up. Such as anima and lagima. Having become fully opulent, he roamed all the universe without opposition, just like the wind. Once, while enjoying the water of the river Narmada, the puffed up Kartavirya-arjuna, surrounded by beautiful women and garlanded with a garland of victory, stopped the flow of the water with his 1,000 arms. Meanwhile, the 10-headed Ravana was downstream. And no water was coming, and he was... Because Kartavirya-arjuna made the water flow in the opposite direction, the camp of Ravana, which was set up on the bank of the Narmada near the city of Mahishmati, was inundated. He was upstream. This was unbearable to the ten-headed Ravana, who considered himself a great hero and could not tolerate Kartavirya-arjuna's power. When Ravana attempted to insult Kartavirya-arjuna in the presence of the women and thus offended him, guess who won? Kartavirya-arjuna. Kartavirya-arjuna easily arrested Ravana and put him in custody in the city of Mahishmati, just as one captures a monkey. And then releases him neglectfully. Just to give us some idea, how powerful was Ravana, and he was like a little puny monkey for Kartavirya-arjuna. Once, while Kartavirya-arjuna was wandering unengaged in a solitary forest and hunting, he approached the residence of Janmadagni. The sage Janmadagni, who was engaged in great austerities in the forest, received the king very well, along with the king's soldiers, ministers, and carriers. He supplied all the necessities to worship these guests, for he possessed a kamadhenu cow that was able to supply everything. Oh, Kartavirya-arjuna thought that Jamadagni was more powerful and wealthy than himself because of possessing a jewel in the form of the kamadhenu. Therefore, he and his own men, the Haihayas, were not very much appreciative of Janmadagni's reception. On the contrary, they wanted to possess that kamadhenu, which was useful for the execution of the Agnihotra Yajna. Being puffed up by material power, Kartavirya-arjuna encouraged his men to steal Janmadagni's kamadhenu. Thus the men forcibly took away the crying kamadhenu along with her calf to Mahishmati, Kartavirya-arjuna's capital. Thereafter, Kartavirya-arjuna, having left with the kamadhenu, Parashuram returned to the ashram. When Parashuram, the youngest son of Janmadagni, heard about Kartavirya-arjuna's nefarious deed, he became as angry as a trampled snake, taking up his fierce chopper, his shield, his bow, and a quiver of arrows, Lord Parashuram, exceedingly angry, chased Kartavirya Arjuna just like a lion chases an elephant. As Kartavirya Arjuna entered his capital, Mahishmatipuri, he saw Lord Parashuram, the best of the Bhrigu dynasty, coming after him, holding his chopper, shield, bow, and arrows. Lord Parashuram was covered with a black deer skin, and his matted locks of hair appeared like the sunshine. Upon seeing Parashuram, Kartavirya Arjuna immediately feared him and sent many elephants, chariots, horses, and infantry soldiers equipped with clubs, swords, arrows, rishtis, shatrughnis, shaktis, and many similar weapons to fight against him. Kartavirya Arjuna sent 17 full Akshohini divisions of soldiers to check Parashuram, but Parashuram alone killed them all. Here's what an Akshohini division is. 109,350 infantry soldiers, the same number of horses, that's Akshohini. Okay. Lord Parashuram, being expert in killing the military strength of the enemy, worked with the speed of the mind and the wind, slicing his enemies with his chopper. Parashu, that's how he gets the Parashuram. Wherever he went, the enemies fell, their legs, arms, and shoulders being severed, their chariot drivers killed, and their carriers, the elephants and horses, all annihilated. By manipulating his axe and arrows, Parashuram cut to pieces the shields, flags, bows, and bodies of Kartavirya Arjuna's shoulders, who fell on the battlefield, muddying the ground with their blood. Kartavirya Arjuna, infuriated, rushed to the battlefield. Then Kartavirya Arjuna, with his 1,000 arms, simultaneously fixed arrows on 500 bows to kill Lord Parashuram, but Lord Parashuram, the best of fighters, released enough arrows with only one bow to cut to pieces immediately all the arrows and bows in the hands of Kartavirya Arjuna. When his arrows were cut to pieces, Kartavirya Arjuna uprooted many trees and hills with his own hands, and again rushed strongly towards Lord Parashuram to kill him. But Parashuram then used his axe with great force and cut off Kartavirya Arjuna's arms, just as one might lop off the hoods of a serpent. Thereafter, Parashuram cut like a mountain peak, cut off the head of Kartavirya Arjuna, who had already lost his arms. When Kartavirya Arjuna's 10,000 sons saw their father killed, they all fled in fear. Then Parashuram, having killed the enemy, released the Kamadhenu, which had undergone great suffering, and brought it back with its calf to his residence, where he gave it to his father, Jamadagni. Parashuram described to his father and brothers his activities in killing Kartavirya Arjuna. Upon hearing of these deeds, Jamadagni spoke to his son as follows. Is he going to be pleased or displeased? Huh?
Displeased.
Displeased. Oh, great hero. My dear son, Parashuram, you have unnecessarily killed the king, who was supposed to be the embodiment of all the demigods. Thus, you have committed a sin. my dear son, we are all brahmanas and have become worshipable for the people in general because of our quality of forgiveness. It is because of this quality of forgiveness that Lord Brahma, the Supreme Spiritual Master of the universe, has achieved his post. The duty of a brahmana is to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is pleased with those who are forgiving. My dear son, killing a king who is an emperor is more severely sinful than killing a brahmana. But now, if you become Krishna conscious and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. When Lord Parashuram was given this order by his father, he immediately agreed, saying, "Let it be so." For completely 1 year he traveled to all the holy places. Then he returned to his father's residence. And it goes on. So that's Haihaya getting material and as a result of getting choppered by Parashuram, spiritual benedictions from Dattatreya. Hare Krishna. So, prasadam?